I used to be a fantasy football novice. Friends called me rookie. They'd ask me things like, hey, what does last place feel like? I felt alone. I didn't like it. Then one day, I decided to do something about it. I joined the Talking Heads Nation. The Talking Heads Nation is a community where fans all over can come together and learn what it takes to win a fantasy football championship. Now the only things I have to worry about is where I'm going to put my championship trophy. I made the investment into winning. Are you going to join me today in the Talking Heads Nation?
Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowell.
Ah, yes, Seth, we are back with another great episode. You are listening to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Carrier, and once again by my side is Seth Lowell. Back for another special episode, Seth. We have a big announcement, as the intro kind of alluded to. But before we get into that, we wanted to jump into some quick fantasy talk. And Seth, you just recently wrote an article for Cover 32, cover32.com, the Patriots section. And you wrote about the fantasy wild card of Mike Gillisley, kind of him having a wide range of outcomes. And so let's dive into Mike Gillisley. What are the upside and downsides with Mike Gillisley?
Well, I think the upside with Mike Gillisley is, you know, he's shown flashes last year in Buffalo of what he could potentially be. Averaged 5.7 yards per carry, was incredibly efficient, had 9 rushing touchdowns behind LeSean McCoy. And there were weeks, you know as well as I know, where you could start Mike Gillisley even with LeSean McCoy going and be sure, you know, that he was gonna give you something. You could put him in your flex if you're in a pinch. So he takes that efficiency, that production over to New England. He figures to fill LeGarrette Blount's shoes as the starter. LeGarrette Blount had a record year. He had 18, 19 touchdowns. He was second in the league in total carries. So the thinking is, you know, the upside with Gillisley is, okay, if he can take over the workload that LeGarrette Blount was given last year, you know, and be the workhorse for New England, he's a better runner than LeGarrette Blount. So, you know, the sky is the limit. He definitely has a ton of upside. So that's, you know, the case for Mike Gillisley. And I talked about it in the article. And, you know, whenever a player goes to New England, whenever an offensive weapon goes to New England, there's always incredible upside because the Patriots offense is so high powered. The downside, of course, is the small sample size. He's never played, you know, he's never been a starter. He's only had 1 year in the NFL where he's played over 10 games, which was last year. And there's a ton of competition in that backfield for New England. And I don't think anybody's completely sure at this point how that's going to shake out. You have James White and Rex Burkhead, who figured to be the backs that are going to be catching passes. You still have Dion Lewis, you know, so we're not 100% certain that he's going to be the guy, but if he is, he's got a ton of upside.
He has a ton of upside, as you mentioned. And, you know, the Patriots had the third most rushing attempts last year. They started their drives on average up 7.2 points. So they're starting their drives by more than a touchdown. What does that lead a lot more teams than not to do is to get into a running game situation, especially in the second half of these games. And Gillisley only had 4 games last year where he had 10 or more carries, as you mentioned, so it is a small sample size. The thing that I like about Gillisley is that not just him, but all of the Patriots' backfield is going relatively cheap in terms of ADP. And I even tweeted back out today, you know, to Mike Reese. He was putting out an article kind of pumping up Mike Gillisley, and I said, stop pumping up Mike Gillisley. I love exactly where he's going right now. And I think that's a benefit, too, because that allows you to grab all of the Patriots' backfield. Say you wanted to get more than just the Mike Gillisley share. You want to get 2-3 pieces of the New England Patriots' backfield, because there is going to be productivity in the backfield. But as we've seen from prior years with New England, it's hit or miss, and you don't know which running back it's going to be. LeGarrette Blount had the benefit last year of basically being the only person that could run in between the tackles or be that kind of back. So he had the entire lion's share of that role. Whereas this year, they could mix in Rex Burkhead. And obviously, they gave the extension to James White. Dion Lewis is not going to be out for 10 games. He's going to be there week 1. They like to sprinkle him in. He's a lot more dynamic. So there's a lot of concerns, which is what is holding back Gillislee's ADP. But if you could say that you can get all of the Patriots backfield with a 6th round pick and then, you know, let's say an 8th round pick and then some like freebie 14th rounder, 15th, 16th, 17th round with Rex Burkhead, I like that.
Yeah, and I think that his ADP is so low mainly because of the uncertainty and how that backfield's going to shake out and all the new pieces that they added. So, you know, if you like Mike Gillislee like you and I do, you know, we hope that this ADP, you know, keeps up. And I think he could even – he even has some room, some wiggle room there. So even if he comes back to the pack a little bit and we see his ADP, you know, creep up to, you know, in the 5th round or end of the 4th, I still like him a lot better in that range than a lot of the running backs that are going in the 3rd round, some of which we're going to talk about in the episode today. But, you know, I call him a fantasy, one of the fantasy wild cards because he's one of the hardest players to project out this year because of all the, you know, all the moving pieces. You know, we know the Patriots had one of the top 2 or 3 offenses in all of football in virtually every single statistic last season. And they added Brandon Cooks. They were without Tom Brady for the first 4 games of the season. You had Malcolm Mitchell in his rookie season. Chris Hogan in his first year in New England took him a little while to get his feet underneath him. So you add all that together, combined with the fact that, okay, they're bringing in Mike Gillislee. They brought in Brandon Cooks. They brought in Dwayne Allen. And their offense could be even better than it was a season ago. So a tremendous amount of upside for Mike Gillislee. I think the main roadblock for him is going to be competition, and only time will tell how that shakes out.
Yep. And last year he did he was very successful or efficient when he had playing time. He rated out as the number one success rate running back, according to Football Outsiders, and as the number one DVOA running back, which kind of values play, value per play as a running back. So he was extremely efficient, and you look at LeGarrette Blount last year, who had 299 carries, was not very efficient, less than 4 yards per carry. So he's got a role where even if he doesn't get 299 carries, but say he gets 220, but he's dramatically more efficient than LeGarrette Blount, again, another area where he's going to have tremendous fantasy value. I find it really difficult to project him outside the top 24 as a running back.
Here's a question. How do you think my article on Mike Gillislee pumping him up is going to drive up his ADP?
I don't think you might be giving yourself a little too much credit there. No, but I do think that a lot of people have been asking that question and kind of out there in the Twitter sphere. I think that his ADP is going to go up the closer we get to training camp. The more it gets solidified that he's going to be at least a goal line back. You know, maybe he doesn't need to get all the work in between the 20s, but as long as he's getting the goal line work and getting a majority of the carries, considering where his ADP is, that's tough to avoid.
This is the frustrating time of year for people like you and me who follow the NFL so closely, we know which players we like early on. We don't have to wait till August. We kind of know the players that we're going after in May or June, and we just want these drafts to happen now before everybody else starts catching on to these players, and we see it happen every single year. So Yeah. I mean, these drafts cannot get here soon enough. Mike Gillislee is Exhibit A. He's the perfect example of the player that, you know, you're on top of before everyone else is, and then a month or two pass, the draft comes, and then everybody else is hopping on the bandwagon. But, you know, I guess that's what comes with the territory.
Yeah, if you look at Mike Gillislee's chart, his ADP chart, I'm looking at it right now. It looks like exactly what you would want your sales chart to look like. It's just skyrocketing. It's just going straight up. And that's just in the last month. So I expect it to continue all the way through training camp and through preseason, unfortunately. But Seth, let's talk about what we want to kind of announce to everyone and listening. We've been kind of working on something over the last few months, working hard and kind of putting together our draft kit. Our draft kit as of today is available. You guys can go ahead and download it at talkingheadsnation.com. We're really excited. Our goal is to really create a community with everyone and get to know everyone a lot better. I was mentioning this to Seth, and over the last several weeks, we had a lot of people that we communicated. They got our draft roadmap last year, and they were emailing us back and forth. And a couple of them would email in. They made the playoffs, had a successful year, even got a great review from someone saying that they made their championship in their first year. All great success. But we never really got to stay connected in the offseason or right now, so we're hoping that everyone is still listening and their diehards are listening all offseason. But we wanted to figure out and create a way that we can keep in touch with everyone, learn everyone by their first names, know that you're listening, bounce us questions during the offseason and everything else. So we created the NFL Talking Heads Nation, and I think there's a lot that we're going to be offering here. Seth, if you kind of want to jump in and explain a little bit what the draft kit and everything else is involved.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things in the draft kit is our draft grid, which is, you know, kind of revolutionary. Not to pat ourselves in the back too much, but it's really cool. I mean, you and I were involved in the draft roadmaps last year. Obviously, we got to work with a ton of cool people, some more advanced fantasy players, some, you know, beginners to the fantasy game. And you know how it is. Like, we go over players that they should be going after, players they should stay away from. But once the draft happens, things go haywire. You know, one of the people in their league will draft a player they didn't think it was going to happen. Then, you know, a wrench is thrown into their plans. They're like, okay, what do I do now? I wish Seth and Jeff were here. So the draft grid is foolproof. It takes them through the entire draft process round by round. And it's like a cheat sheet that they can use for the entire draft. So it's 100% foolproof. You're really, really interested to hear the feedback from that this year. I think it's going to help a lot of people out. And one of the coolest things, too, as part of it is, you know, if they're in the middle of a draft, they can text us as part of the community and get real-time instant feedback if they're on the clock saying, hey, you know, when I'm in the third round, I'm thinking about taking Latavius Murray. What do you think? And then you and I can get right back to them in real time saying, no, that's way too early for Latavius Murray. And I use him, of course, because, you know, whenever I can take a shot at Latavius Murray, I'm going to take it.
Yeah. Oh, geez, cheap shot right there. But yes, as you mentioned, I just want to dissect a few of these. I remember last year, you know, we talked to someone out in South Korea and we did a FaceTime with him, and that was awesome. And then, as you mentioned, we had someone who entered into money leagues way more than we did at like $5,000 per year, and it was just great to have like the difference of level of fantasy players that were listening and involved in the community. So we want to stay in touch. And to the draft grid, I mean, I imagine like people printing it out and laminating it and showing up with it almost like one of those like offensive coordinator charts, like your play calling. It's color coded. It's got, depending on where you start on the 1 through 3, I believe 4 through 8, depending on where you start in the draft, your starting position, we tell you who to draft in the first round, second round, third round. Then we kind of do an evaluation, tell you where to go from 4 to 6. Then we also have a QB strategy chart, where to target each of those players. We have the bench strategy. And so every single step of the way, you're basically just following this chart. And there's also principles down there, set. So we say, don't draft this person, don't draft that person in this round. Just, they don't present value. So we just say, you know what, don't overthink it. Just do not draft this person in this round. And the messaging part, as you mentioned, Seth, the real-time communication. We're creating a private group message on GroupMe. You don't have to leave your text message. It connects right to it, whatever device you're working on, you use. And you just pick up the phone, message us, and we get back to you. I mean, I don't think anyone is creating that type of close, intimate relationship with their community, and that's what we're shooting for here as well.
Yep. And you can ask us everything, even doesn't have to be football related, right? Jeff's a big movie buff, and you know, he's into a lot of TV series. If you say, hey Jeff, I'm thinking about you know, getting into a new TV series, you know, what do you recommend? And Jeff will have a bunch of different recommendations for you. So, you know, a lot of good things will come from it, but we hope a lot of people take advantage of it. I know I'm pretty excited for it.
Absolutely. We want to get connected with everyone. Another piece, Seth, that we didn't mention is our ADP videos. Seth is actually flying down to Asheville, North Carolina. So if you guys are some beer, craft beer buffs, and you want to meet us out, let us know. Seth's coming down. We've got a studio. We're going to be recording our ADP videos that we're going to be launching in the 1st of August. Just a player, kind of player profile, breaking down where they're going, where their stats, how we feel about it. Just another tool to the toolbox that, again, it's going to be only available at talkingheadsnation.com. So we encourage everyone to go there now. Message us if you have any questions about it. You can find us on Twitter at NFL Talking Heads. You can find us on Instagram. And, of course, you can email us through our website as well, which is NFLTalkingHeads.com. Seth, though, let's get into the meat of this episode, which is projections versus ADP. So one of the things that you're going to get in the draft kit is customizable projections. What I mean by that is we've got all our projections up there, and in the draft sheet, which is actually really cool, we actually show you right next to what the projected fantasy points is. Right next to that is the average draft position. So we're going to be breaking that down today, identifying some people that we have projected going high or low, and it just doesn't really reflect their ADP. Also in the sheet, though, is our ADP love scale. So depending on where they're going, we give you a ranking of 1 through 10 on how do we feel right now on their ADP. So it kind of gives you a quick indication in terms of, do we really like where they're going or do they not? You know, obviously if they have an 8, we like it. If they have a 1, we don't. And also in this sheet is the risk factor of drafting them. Considering injury, ADP, upside, and history, we give you our risk factor. So there is a ton to consider here, and we put it all on one sheet that you can go ahead and change the scoring dependent on your league scoring. So a lot of times you're looking at rankings and you have weird scoring in your league. Well, on this sheet, you can just go ahead and change what the scoring for yardage, touchdowns, receptions, anything like that. If you have any crazy stats, it should be able to fix it there. And then we'll update the fantasy points for you to be reflective to your league. And then also, last part is we also show you what their 2016 finish is. So you kind of have everything in one spot for you. Seth, though, let's jump into the projections versus ADP. Who is the first person that you wanted to bring up?
First person I want to bring up is Isaiah Crowell. You know, you look at the third round range overall, the third round, there's a lot of running backs going in that range, and I absolutely hate it. I think it's the worst spot you can be. If you can get running backs in the first two rounds, now is the year to do it, because it's a very deep year for running backs. There's a lot of running backs that can help you, but there's a significant drop off after the first two rounds. So the first player, you know, that I look at it is Isaiah Crowell. 7 touchdowns last year. He's only been in the NFL 2 years. You know, like I always say, he seems like he's been in the NFL forever. And I, you know, say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he's only been in the league for 2 years. Well, good job.
Yep. And I mostly say that just to annoy you. But so he had 7 touchdowns last year.
And the rest of our
listeners,
apparently.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. But he plays for the Cleveland Browns. Terrible offense. He was the only running back. He was one of only 2 running backs in the top 20 last year that had 0 20-plus carry games. So not one single game last year did Isaiah Crowell have 20 carries or more. The only other running back in the top 20 was Tevin Coleman. So which you expect that from Tevin Coleman. He has more big play abilities and a much better offense. So Isaiah Crowell with the 7 touchdowns, I feel like that's the high watermark for him. And he's not someone that's going to get a ton of carries, partly because it's the opposite of New England. New England's always ahead. You know, LeGarrette Blount had a ton of carries. Cleveland's always playing from behind, which means naturally it's going to be fewer carries for Isaiah Crowell. So I just don't love it. And what I told you, you know, the other day is I don't want to take someone like Isaiah Crowell, even though he's a solid, consistent fantasy running back. I don't want to take somebody like him in the third round. It just that isn't very appealing for me. I'd rather take somebody else with more upside.
Yeah, and maybe this is something where we even add in another column here on this projection sheet of upside, because we got him projected pretty good, Seth. But you know, he's going 29 right now, 29 overall. Our ADP love scale on him is a ranking of 2. So we don't like it a lot. There's no upside or anything like that. and we have on a draft grid to just stay away in the third round. If he falls to the fourth, I think he presents good value. However, the other running back that I wanted to get your opinion on was Leonard Fournette. Leonard Fournette, we've got ranked all the way down at our 20th ranked running back right now, under 200 points, under 190 points to be exact, and he's coming off the board as a 12th overall running back. As a rookie playing out in Jacksonville, again, I just don't like the upside. I mean, the upside is actually pretty good, but the risk factor is really high. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on Leonard Fournette?
I don't like him either at all. I mean, we have him projected for 7 touchdowns, which is very generous. And if you take away the 3 rushing touchdowns that Blake Bortles had last year, and you look at just Jacksonville Jaguar running backs, guess how many touchdowns they had as a group? Take a guess. Combined.
Like 2.
They had 5 total touchdowns. 5. So you're telling me that Leonard Fournette in his first year behind one of the worst offensive lines in football, Pro Football Focus has him ranked 22nd overall in the NFL out of 32 teams, so very bad. You're telling me that Fournette in his first year is going to have 7 rushing touchdowns, which is 2 more touchdowns than the entire Jaguars backfield had last year. And I know he's a significant upgrade from a talent standpoint, which is why he went in the first round. But I just, when you look at his injury history, you look at how bad the Jacksonville Jaguars are, how bad they are in the red zone, I don't love it. I think his upside is 7 touchdowns. But when I look at projections, I want there to be upside beyond what the player is projected for. And I don't see the upside beyond 7 touchdowns for Fournette, not in Jacksonville, not this year.
Right. And of course, you're referring to our sheet here where we have 7 touchdowns. Looking at objectively, thinking he's going to get all of the goal line carries and a little bit of a positive regression in terms of more rushing touchdowns on the year. 988 yards, 7 touchdowns, and about 30 catches for another 200 yards. I think most people would look at that stat line and say, that's pretty reasonable. That's pretty generous of a stat line for Leonard Fournette year one, would you not say?
Yeah, I think it's completely reasonable. I think that's his upside. I think you could also see him having 4 or 5 touchdowns. I think the yardage is spot on. I think that's very fair. I think the touchdowns might be a little bit high, but the catches, the catches is a complete toss up. We'll see in the NFL level with the Jaguars, you know, how many passes he catches this year, but I think his yardage, I think he's definitely a 1,000-yard running back. So he's another interesting player. But for me, I just, you know, until I see it year one, I'm going to be staying away from Leonard Fournette, especially at this price point. You know, somebody that's going, you know, middle of the second round to early third, I'm staying away from him. I think that's too high.
Yeah. One running back, Seth, also that I've got on my list here that is going in the 20s. Leonard Fournette was going 22. This person is going 20th overall right now in a 12-team PPR. And that's Marshawn Lynch. You know, we have him down for 9 touchdowns. Again, pretty generous. I don't think he's going to necessarily run for 1,000 yards. I don't think anyone sees that. They're going to mix in DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard. He's not going to really catch the ball. And so we give him 9 touchdowns, and he ranks at, you know, a very, you know, outside, barely squeezing in as an RB2, but he's coming off the board as the 10th running back, and it just doesn't make sense on where you can kind of project him to be and where he's being drafted.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree, and I've been off, you know, the Marshawn Lynch bandwagon up to this point. I'm going to remain off it. I'm not buying the hype with him in the Raiders this year. Everybody wants to talk about the offensive line, but Latavius Murray had a very, you know, kind of year last year. He was average. And I don't know at this stage in his career if Marshawn Lynch is a better runner than Latavius Murray. And you put that together with the fact that he's not going to catch passes at all for the Raiders. So I don't love it. 9 touchdowns. Now, could he have 10, 11, 12? Could he have a LeGarrette Blount type rushing touchdown year? There's always that upside with Marshawn Lynch because he's been such a touchdown machine in the past. But at that point in the draft, I mean, you're talking about in a 12-team PPR league, you know, second round, I don't like it at all. I think there's you can go a bunch of different directions when you're in that round. You have players like Doug Baldwin there. You have other running backs there, maybe like a Melvin Gordon, you know, Jordan Howard even. I don't like Marshawn Lynch, especially you know, with where his ADP is right now.
Yeah, and that actually brings me to the next person I did want to bring up. I said, well, let's talk about someone that we do like and we've got projected for higher or at least where their ADP is, and that is Doug Baldwin. Doug Baldwin's ADP right now is 25, so you're looking at a 12-team league, early third, a last pick in the second round, and he last year finished the year as the number 8 wide receiver with 94 receptions, 1,100 yards, and 7 touchdowns. And he only had 126 targets. So I like to see that because a lot of times, remember that big year from DeAndre Hopkins? DeAndre Hopkins had over 190 targets. That's just unsustainable from year to year. You're going to get a regression back to the norm. And
if they're throwing out the regression back to the mean. Regression to the mean.
Yep, I have to, because you have to pay attention to this. And it's the same when Kansas City had no receiving touchdowns, and or when Mike Evans only had 4 with his rookie year, he had like close to double digits. So this is a real thing. I mean, but 126 targets is extremely repeatable. And so there should be no reason why Doug Baldwin can't be in that same range. We've got him projected in the top 10 for wide receivers, Seth. And right now he's going in 25th overall.
Yeah, love Doug Baldwin. Seattle has the worst offensive line in the entire NFL, which means they're not going to be able to run, and they're probably going to be – they've been more of a throwing team for the last couple of years anyways, ever since, you know, Marshawn Lynch left. And my favorite thing about Doug Baldwin, the thing that impressed me the most about him, is he had that year in 2015 where he had 14 touchdowns, over 1,000 yards, you know, career numbers across the board. And a lot of people were, you know, wavering on him. They thought, you know, maybe that was, you know, an anomaly. And then what does he do? He follows it up. He doesn't get 14 touchdowns, but he puts up a respectable amount of touchdowns, 7 touchdowns. He actually goes up in yardage, 1,100 receiving yards. And just under 100 catches. I mean, what more could you ask from Doug Baldwin following a career year in 2015 than what he did last year? And oh, by the way, each out of the last 4 seasons, he's played all 16 games. So he's incredibly reliable. He's in one of the better fantasy offenses. And he's the guy. There's nobody else besides maybe Jimmy Graham, who emerged last year. There's really nobody else on Seattle that you really have to worry about, you know, kind of eating into his, you know, his production. He's pretty much got it on lockdown. So I love Doug Baldwin, and he's actually turning into, you know, kind of an underrated player, if you can believe it.
Yeah, he is. And now, you know, he's going off the board. It's probably the 13th rank, so maybe he's off by a few spots. But still, you're getting him at a good spot. You're pretty much, you know, feel really confident about a top 10 wide receiver spot. He did obviously regress on the touchdowns, as you mentioned, from 14 to 7. But the fact that he still put up 7, and the numbers last year are, once again, very repeatable. There's nothing there that scares me to say, well, you can't expect this type of production again in this certain spot, whether it be yards, receptions, or touchdowns.
And with receivers, my big thing with wide receivers in fantasy is, you know, touchdowns can come and go. We saw Mike Evans have that weird year a couple years ago where he barely caught any touchdowns, and we're like, okay, that number is going to go up. So touchdowns, you can't always depend on unless it's somebody like Dez Bryant, who does it every single year. He's just a touchdown monster. So what I look at is targets, receptions, and are those consistent? And with Doug Baldwin's case, each out of the last 4 or 5 years, he's increased his receptions and targets every single year. You know, if you look back from 2012 to 2016, 29 to 50 to 66 to 78 to 94 for his reception. So every single year he's catching more balls. And if you can tell me, especially in a PPR league, I'm getting a receiver that has a shot at catching 90 to 100 passes. That's going to get over 100 targets in his sleep. He's going to get over 1,000 receiving yards. Then give me that, and we'll worry about the touchdowns later, because those will come. That's just how I view wide receivers, especially when I'm drafting them in the first 3 rounds.
I completely agree. The next wide receiver set that I wanted to talk about was Stephon Diggs. I think that his ADP is tough to really believe right now at 71.7. I keep checking it, and I don't know if it's just like certain leagues or drafts not drafting him, and then I'll see him go in like the fifth round. But even if you have to draft him in the fifth round to grab him, I think that's completely okay of where you can project where his 2017 finish is going to happen. You could arguably say that he's going to be in the same realm as the Demaryius Thomas, Michael Crabtrees of the world, around 220 points or so, yet he's being drafted arguably 40 spots lower, depending on what type of league you're in. Now, if you're in one where he is going in the fifth round, again, like I think his is pretty volatile right now. I think it's going to keep going up. But Stephon Diggs has one of the lowest drop rates of the year, got moved a lot more into the slot last year. He's only played 13 games the last 2 years, heading into his third season, and he doesn't really catch touchdowns. He hasn't had an overwhelming amount of targets. He hasn't even broken 1,000 yards yet, so maybe that's why the the projection is a little bit low, or his ADP is a little bit low, but I feel like he's on the brink of a breakout year.
I mean, the guy missed three games last year, and he still finished with 111 targets. So if he plays those three games, he's getting more targets than Doug Baldwin. He's getting more catches than Doug Baldwin because he had 84 catches missing three games last year. And, yeah, he hasn't had the touchdowns because he plays on a bad team, behind a bad offensive line and a quarterback that struggles to stay healthy and is consistently average. But if they can get any amount of production from Sam Bradford this year – and, you know, they have Adam Thielen there as well, Laquon Treadwell in his second season. They brought in Dalvin Cook. So if those additions and those players can collectively, you know, make the offense better, if the offense as a whole can improve, then Stephon Diggs, those touchdowns are going to go up. Because, and like we just talked about with Doug Baldwin, I think we can agree that Stephon Diggs is, you know, he's a lock for 80 catches. He's a lock for 100 targets. He's a very, very good bet to have over 1,000 yards this year. This is his third season. The guy's only 23 years old, for goodness sake. And when you just look at the player, he's probably one of the five or six most talented receivers in the NFL. So at some point, you would have to think at the young age of 23 that he's going to start stepping into his own and the talent's going to win out. I think you could be seeing anywhere from five to eight touchdowns from Stephon Diggs. I think that's a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, and he finished as the 30th ranked wide receiver last year in 13 games, coming off the board as the 32nd wide receiver right now. So you say to yourself, okay, well, that makes sense. He finishes the 30th. He's kind of coming off right around there. But as we both mentioned, if he can play those extra three games, then you have – I think that the upside is not baked into the price right now. And when you can get someone that has that kind of upside, not even just playing the extra three games, I think that he could play better in those 13 games themselves, being a third-year wide receiver, learning the system a lot more, second year with Sam Bradford. Just those reasons alone, he's got a higher upside than where he finished last year and where he's being drafted.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And if you can get, you know, Demaryius Thomas is a really good comparison because the main difference between Diggs and Demaryius Thomas is Demaryius Thomas is consistent, but he, especially with their quarterback situation now, he lacks the upside. Diggs has the upside. He just needs to be a little bit more consistent. But if you can get someone like Diggs, you know, two or three rounds later than Demaryius Thomas, similar to what we talked about with Gillislee, you know, his landing spot, that's pretty good if you can get him three rounds, later than someone like a Demaryius Thomas.
Yeah, I think Seth, you and I have got kind of our podcast schedule calendar laid out for all the way up until the season starts. And one of our episodes that we're looking forward to the most is the same player, but, you know, X amount of rounds later. Like, who are people that are being drafted later, but they're pretty much identical people for whatever reason, the name, whatever. Last year, we talked a lot about getting Michael Crabtree five rounds later than Amari Cooper because they're essentially the same type of receiver production-wise and everything else. So I think we're going to have some great examples just by today's conversation with ADPs and projections that we're going to have a lot of people that, you know, we can target. And if you go into the draft with this type of ammunition knowing, okay, I don't need to draft DT here or Crabtree. I don't need to grab Isaiah Crowell. I know I can go and grab Gillislee later with almost the same type of outcome and projection. You're going to be well more adverse and ready for your draft no matter how it unfolds.
Yep. And, you know, we've talked several times already this year about the point we made last year with Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper. And this one thing that I learned is, you know, we're not always right, but when we are right, you know, we're going to be talking about it till the cows come home.
Who's the next wide receiver set that you want to talk about?
So I really actually like Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, his ADP, you know, 53.9. So he's going right between between the fifth and seventh round, you know, probably as high as the fifth round.
Early fifth.
So I think that's a great spot for Larry Fitzgerald. We're talking about a guy who was in the top three last year in receptions. He's really the only receiver you can rely on in that offense. He's getting older, obviously. We talked about him in the players over 30 episode. But I think we're looking at another year where Larry Fitzgerald is going to help your fantasy team out. And similar to Stephon Diggs, different type of receiver, obviously, different stage in his career. But he's another receiver that you're going to get later than someone like a Demaryius Thomas, who – and if you were to ask me that they're both on the board, you know, at the same spot, I'm probably taking Larry Fitzgerald over Demaryius Thomas, or it's at least a coin flip. So I love Larry Fitzgerald. He definitely isn't somebody you should be sleeping on. He's going to catch a lot of passes. You know, he still does a lot of things that age well. He's got good size. He's a good route runner. He's got good hands. And Carson Palmer, I think, has one more year left in him where, you know, we talk about it a lot too. One of those situations where I don't know if Carson Palmer has a good fantasy season left in him, like a one quarterback league type situation. But I think he's got one more season where he's going to be good enough to at least help Larry Fitzgerald have one more good fantasy season. So I like Larry Fitzgerald this year.
Yeah, I do too. And of course, with an expectation of, I don't think he's going to be a top five wide receiver, probably not even a top 10. I do know that he ranked pretty well last year. But we've kind of got him projected right around where he's coming off the board, which I think is provides value in itself, that saying, okay, you know, Larry Fitzgerald might not finish as a top five, but he's not going to finish as wide receiver 40. So I draft him early fifth, late fourth if I really have to. And I know what person I'm getting. And as you kind of mentioned, he is kind of similar to DT. He's going to be high volume receptions, not going to kill it on yards, and it's going to be probably fairly low or okay in terms of touchdowns. He's going to get his own, but he's not going to get a ton. He's not going to hit 10 most likely. So, I mean, there's value in knowing the outcome, right? I mean, we don't always have to say, well, we're going to grab this person because you never know what he could do. Larry Fitzgerald is the exact opposite. You know what he's going to do. You just plug him right in. He's going to get you just over 200 points or whatever it is that it's going to be on the year in a PPR league.
Yeah, and I think when you're drafting a team, especially when you get into the fifth and sixth round, you can't step up to the plate trying to hit a home run with every single pick, right? It's okay to, you know, take the ball to the opposite field to hit singles, right? Because every player you draft, you can't be like, okay, this player has to win me my league. There are players like Larry Fitzgerald that can help you. They'll fill a specific role on your team. They don't have to be, you know, an Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham. You know, they don't have to have a ton of upside. But what Larry Fitzgerald brings to the table is someone who's incredibly consistent and you can depend on. And I think dependability is important when you're building a championship roster, and especially in the fifth or sixth round. So I love Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, I remember last year when we had a guest on, Seth, and we were talking about Arian Foster and Josh Gordon. As of today, I can't even believe that these people were being drafted last year. Way too much risk for both of us. And we had someone on saying that they would draft Arian Foster in the fifth, then go back and draft Josh Gordon in the sixth for that exact reason. They can win you your league. Yeah, but you know what you can do too in your draft is you can absolutely lose it for the entire season. You're never going to win an entire league just by the draft, but you can most certainly lose it. And I don't even know what my face looked like when he said that on the air, but I imagine it wasn't pretty. Less pretty than it really is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's an understatement. but another receiver too that I like, though, you know, is Emmanuel Sanders. And I don't love him, but his ADP is, you know, he's going in the sixth, seventh round, 77.7. So he's another player that, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be sleeping on. He's someone that you're not going to be excited to draft, but he's a player that if you can get him in the seventh round, he's a good flex player. He's someone, if you had to, you could put on your bench depending on how many receivers you've drafted up to that point. You know, maybe he doesn't start for you, but he's a good player. If you have Emmanuel Sanders, rather, as your last receiver or your last flex player or, you know, your best bench player, it's not a terrible spot to be in.
No, I mean, if you go and look at our projections right now, Emmanuel Sanders is sandwiched in between. Now, a couple of these are only points difference, but he's sandwiched in between Keenan Allen and Brandon Cooks. Then you look to the field right to the right, and this is why I love looking at this. So Keenan Allen at 30 overall, Brandon Cooks at 24 overall, and then you got Emmanuel Sanders going 77 overall. Yet in the projections, you look at it, he is right in between them. So you think to yourself, like, well, geez, like, Emmanuel Sanders looks like a steal practically. And then you go, well, these numbers can't be right. And you go back and you look at last year's numbers for Emmanuel Sanders, and he had very identical numbers to what we have projected out, which is about 80 catches, 1,000 yards, and 5 touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, him and Demaryius Thomas. I mean, this is going to be another great, you know, probably another duo that we'll talk about in that episode where we talk about receivers or players that you should pass on in you know, one of the early rounds because you can get an identical player, you know, several rounds later. I think Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas are on the same team. I think you see a little bit of that with those two because Demaryius Thomas, someone who's probably going in the third round, Emmanuel Sanders, somebody going in the seventh round. I'd probably rather have Emmanuel Sanders in the seventh than Demaryius Thomas in the third. You know, call me crazy, but I think that that's another Michael Crabtree, Amari Cooper example.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying I really necessarily hate DT in that spot, but how can you argue that statement, especially knowing the amount of production that Emmanuel Sanders has that's similar to DT? Like, why are they going so far apart? And a lot of it has to do, obviously, with the quarterback situation out there. They're just no one gives them any love, but they clearly still got it done last year. They weren't very efficient at running. They had to move the ball. They had multiple different quarterbacks starting for them. So even with that type of uncertainty at the quarterback position, they still got it done.
Yeah, exactly.
Player set that I have here that I know both of us aren't really high on. We've got him pretty far low here in terms of the projections. That's Sammy Watkins going at 41 overall. He hasn't, he played 8 games last year. He does have those big games that makes you think, well, if he could play a full season, then great. Buffalo, at least with Rex Ryan the last couple of years, and Tyrod Taylor hasn't thrown the ball a ton. You know, they're not Drew Brees out there completing 70% of nearly 700 passes. So I know that he is the number one, and he's going to be fed targets, but it just never seems to just work out the way you want it to with Sammy Watkins. And the other issue is we're talking about all these other people who are basically proven or has similar upside. You know, I don't see Sammy Watkins getting up into top 5 wide receiver territory, yet he's still being drafted at 41 overall.
Yeah, Sammy Watkins is one of those players that we're going to look back on, you know, maybe 10 years from now. And, you know, we're going to say, you know, it's not that we hate Sammy Watkins. It's just that we were never willing to draft him where we needed to draft him in order to get him on our team, because he's always going to be a pricier player rather, that I'm going to want to pay for. So he's always going to be someone that's going in the first 3 or 4 rounds. And the guy just can't stay healthy. You know, when he stays healthy, he gets touchdowns. He has a ton of talent. But, you know, the offense that he plays on definitely is restrictive, and his health is he's incredibly inconsistent. So I like Sammy Watkins as a talent. I liked him coming out of college. It's just there's always going to be somebody in the league that likes him a lot more than I do, and that's why I'm never going to own a player like Sammy Watkins.
No, I mean, there's injury risk. There's also usage risk. There's the team overall, just how productive they're going to be and efficient, how many red zone trips they're going to have. And then, of course, there is the idea that, you know, I think his upside not to the fullest, but for a large portion, his upside is already baked into his price.
Yeah, yep, that's the problem. And you have games last year that just really, you know, you're scratching your head. You know, against the Jets, he had 2 catches for 20 yards, right? He had 1 catch for 10 yards against Cleveland. These are some bad teams, and he's putting up these stinkers against them. So that's the problem with players like Watkins is, yeah, he'll have those games where he blows up and goes for, you know, $1.54 and a touchdown like he did against Miami last year. But then he'll put up these duds consistently to where you can't rely on him. And, you know, you don't want to get into a situation when you're in the playoffs, you know, a win-or-go-home scenario, and you have a player like Sammy Watkins that you spent a top-four-round pick on that completely lets you down. So that's the problem with a player like Sammy Watkins. And, you know, we just talked about Larry Fitzgerald, who you can get, you know, 3 or 4 rounds later, much more consistent.
About a round and a half later. But let's get to a couple quarterbacks, Seth, here as we kind of wrap up, touch on some of these. One of them that I think is just going to have a, you know me with my positive and negative regression, but how can you not, is Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan, you know, I got lucky. I got him on one of my teams. It kind of reminds me almost like I think Eli Manning might be in the situation this year where he might have that kind of upside, but not as much as Matt Ryan. But Matt Ryan throwing for 35 touchdowns last year, 5,000 yards, almost his career high. Everything was clicking for Atlanta last year. They don't have their offensive coordinator, Kyle Shanahan. Atlanta had the most total plays of 20 plus yards in the NFL. Everything screams negative regression. He's going as a fourth quarterback off the board, and I can't get there.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Matt Ryan. You know, what more can you say? I mean, he's a stud. He's probably, you know, one of the him, Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, Luck, probably the top five quarterbacks. And I think, you know, Matt Ryan's going to have another big season. I think another quarterback, you know, in that sort of tier, Tom Brady. I mean, I know it sounds kind of obvious to talk about Tom Brady. We have him projected for 34 touchdowns, which I think is extremely conservative of an estimate when you consider he had, what, 26, 27 touchdowns last season, and he missed the first four games. They add Brandon
last year.
26, 27. That's why I have you to correct me, my little fact checker over there. So 28 touchdowns, and he missed the first four games. So you're telling me, so he averages around, what, between 2 and 3 touchdowns a game, you know, let's say an extra 8 touchdowns on the low level, right? We're talking about 36 touchdowns, and they bring in Brandon Cooks, they bring in Dwayne Allen, they bring in Mike Gillisley. So there's a lot to like in New England this season. Malcolm Mitchell entering his second season. Brady has all the weapons that he needs. I think he could have a 40 touchdown season, and which could be his last season in the NFL. You never know.
You never know. It could be the last of the Patriots, and they had to move on. That Garoppolo situation obviously is going to be extremely interesting to keep an eye on. I mean, I agree. Like 34 is pretty conservative. I don't think we have anything like crazy here. We do have Jameis Winston really high on our list, but the numbers don't look, you know, that crazy. Now, Tom Brady in a one quarterback league, I know that both of us just can't get there probably on where he's going at 31 overall. But let's touch base on a two quarterback league real quick. You know, how early are you drafting Brady / Rodgers? How many quarterbacks go or are you willing to draft in the first round or the top 15 picks in a two quarterback league?
So let's say top 15. I'd be willing to take two quarterbacks in the top 15. That's Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady.
Yep.
All right. Now, I don't know how early I'd be willing to take Rodgers or Brady. A two quarterback league, you know, it completely changes the game because then, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Brady, most likely they're both first round picks. So I could see myself taking Tom Brady or Rodgers at the end of the first round, maybe 8, 9, 10, somewhere in that range. But yeah, in a two quarterback league, Brady is going to be a monster. He's someone that could legitimately throw 40 touchdowns. So, but where would you take him in a two quarterback league?
Yeah, I think after you get to or get through all the studs, I kind of have what we call or what I call like the Elite Eight, and that's all the way up including AJ Green. After that, when you start have to, you know, I think LeSean McCoy's close and Jordy's close, mm-hmm. even if you include them too. I think once you get kind of past that level and you start including the Melvin Gordons and definitely the Jordan Haywards of the world, Howard of the world, where there's
Jordan Haywards.
Yeah, the Jordan Haywards of the world. I think there's a lot more uncertainty, and in a two-quarterback league, as I mentioned in the past, I really like to get one of those super stud quarterbacks, and then I don't even need to worry about that position. I can just mix and match, grab streamers if I need to for the second quarterback. So I would say right around 10 is when I'd start thinking about it in a two-quarterback league.
It depends on the scoring too, because we're in leagues where we, you know, there's 6 points per passing touchdown. If that's the case, I mean, quarterbacks put up more points than any other position in fantasy. So I think with me, you know, you take the Elite Eight first, obviously, and then you look at each one on a case by case situation. So AJ Green, I'd probably lean towards taking him maybe over Brady, but I'm taking Brady over Jordy. I'm taking Brady over McCoy. Over Jordan Howard, over Melvin Gordon, over Freeman. I think that's the spot where you take Brady. And, you know, we love two quarterback leagues. I recommend everyone out there. You know, I wish two quarterback leagues were more prevalent. It just seems like it just adds so much more strategy. It's more exciting. Quarterbacks become more important. I mean, we talk about it every year. But
yeah, I completely agree. People need to start talking about it the same way they talk about PPR. Or something like that. You know, it should be a type of format that you have in your, you know, in terms of the types of leagues that you're playing in. You have a standard league and you have a PPR league. We don't play in standard, but, you know, you have a dynasty league and you have a PPR, a redraft league. And it should be the same way with two quarterback and single quarterback leagues. Well, one quarterback set that I wanted to get your opinion on here. We've got ranked really high. We've got him as the 5th ranked quarterback. He's going 99 overall. That's Jameis Winston. We've got him projected for 4,200 yards, 32 touchdowns, and 17 picks. Just under 200 yards rushing. Just give me your thoughts on Jameis Winston. Can he put up that kind of season? All the additions on offense, weapons, passing specifically. Is he going to take that big step?
Well, this is the year. This is his third season in the NFL that he's entering into. I mean, with Andrew Luck, you know, another quarterback that was hyped coming out of college, it was his third season where he completely blew up and went for 40 touchdowns, right, and took that big leap. So Jameis Winston is the ultimate upside quarterback for fantasy. You know, he has Mike Evans, which everyone knows about. They got added DeSean Jackson in the offseason. You know, they drafted O.J. Howard. They already have Cameron Brate, who had a pretty good year last year. So they got a lot of interesting pieces on that offense. He's got a lot of good weapons. He's got all the talent in the world. So he could be a quarterback. You know, we have him, you know, with 32 passing touchdowns projected for. So, you know, he could be somebody that goes for 38, 39, 40 touchdowns. You know, he has that upside. So he's another one of those players. I say he's the quarterback equivalent to somebody like a Mike Gillisley. Even though he's more of a sure thing because he's got a very high floor, he's also got a tremendous amount of upside given the amount of talent around him. Where, you know, if you were to tell me he's going to go for 40 touchdowns, I wouldn't be surprised. If you were to tell me he's going to throw 25 touchdowns, I wouldn't be surprised either. So there's that huge range with Jameis Winston, which makes him such an intriguing quarterback this year for fantasy.
Absolutely. He's increased his numbers from year one to year two. Over 4,000 passing yards once again, had 28 touchdowns last year, a decent jump from 22 to 28. So we expect to see that progression again going into year three. They've got additional weapons, another year in the system. Dirk Cutter's there. We like that a lot better than Lovie Smith, of course. And, I mean, how can you, especially let's say you have a smaller roster, I mean, drafting 10 picks early. You know, draft him at 89 overall and fill the rest of your team 1 through 7 and draft him in the 8th round or something like that. I mean, there's no reason why you can't love that pick and where he's going. He's got the upside. He's got a considerably high ceiling as well. High floor, should I say.
Yeah. Well, what a compliment for Dirk Cutter. he's better. We like him more than Lovie Smith. How do you think that makes him feel? I think he's pretty pumped to get that compliment.
Well, I guess a lot of people would fit that category, so probably not. But
we like you more than Lovie Smith. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Any other quarterback set that you want to touch on?
No, I mean, you know, I'll spare our listeners the boredom of me talking about Kirk Cousins again. Obviously, I like Kirk Cousins. I just think, you know, I love Kirk Cousins here. I love Andy Dalton, the usual suspects, we should call him. You know, Philip Rivers, love Philip Rivers this year. I do think that Drew Brees is another interesting player. It's like no matter how many touchdowns he's projected for, it still seems too low. Just because no matter how many pieces they lose and they lost Brandon Cooks, it never seems to matter. He still seems to put up big numbers. He's another quarterback that I could see throwing for 38, 39 touchdowns. We have him projected for 35, which seems like a really solid number. I don't think he throws for less than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Andy Dalton, Kirk Cousins providing tremendous value. You know, we could talk about him every single episode, so we got to mix it in a little bit. We love Winston as well. Great point on Drew Brees. Drew Brees is, you could argue, is the equivalent of what Rodgers and Brady is, and every year he's going significant later. He's going like 18 picks later than Aaron Rodgers. Give me another player and then get Drew Brees instead of drafting Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I love that idea.
I know for such an exciting player to watch like Drew Brees, someone who, you know, he's a flashy quarterback. He chucks the ball all over the field. For somebody like that, he does it so quietly because you have Brady and Rodgers that always overshadow him. And you wouldn't expect somebody like Drew Brees, who puts up the type of numbers that he does, to just be so often overlooked. But that's what happens when you have Brady and Rodgers there. So, but that's good for fantasy owners because it means usually you're going to get Drew Brees at a, you know, pretty okay spot.
Yep, a good value. Well, as we kind of wrap up here, everyone check out the NFL Talking Heads Nation. Join us. We've only got a limited amount of people that can be included into our private message group, real-time communication with Seth and I. Check out the draft kit. It's customizable projections according to your league scoring. It's got our risk factor and ADP love scale on there as well. The ADP videos will be coming out soon, as soon as we record them when Seth flies down. So look forward to engaging with everyone, and thanks for listening to the NFL Talking Heads.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that three times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowell. We'll catch you next time.